So first of all, I'm curious how you got involved with Splinter Cell.
Basically, the offer and the script was sent over, and the offer wasn't big enough, and the script was interesting. And when the offer got bigger, I took it more seriously. I looked at it and liked the writing and said yes to it.
So I guess that kills my next question. I was going to ask if you had any personal interest in it, like if you play games.
I'm not a game player, and quite frankly, I don't want to skip over that first question, is that if the writing hadn't been of the quality it was, I wouldn't have done it. I've actually been offered... the only other game I'd ever done before this was I went down and hung out with an actor friend of mine and spent an hour with him, and it turned out to be some video game. But
that was Run Like Hell, I think.
I guess. Yeah. I've never seen it.
Okay.
Kevin Richardson was one of the actors, and he said, hey, why don't you come down and hang out and do this? And I said, okay. I wasn't doing anything that day.
Uh-huh.
But this one was, I have a tendency to want to take things that frighten me, and the thing that frightened me about this, whether I could make this real or not.
Uh-huh.
And without looking, you know, the challenge is always, can if I reach for something and fail, I'll look pretentious.
Right.
You know, and, you know, when as an actor, I can only speak for myself. The only person I really compete with is myself. You know, if I do what I've done before, I don't grow and don't learn. So this was a nice challenge.
What kind of material did you have to draw on while you were laying down your performance? I mean, did you get to see visuals from the game?
No, we hadn't, actually. We did a couple of sessions where we just worked the character up, and they brought in an actor to play all the other roles, somebody else had been involved in the game. And God forbid, I apologize, I cannot remember the fellow's name, but he was brilliant, and gave me somebody to work with. And it's to Ubisoft's credit that they gave me a certain amount of freedom to bring what I bring to this character, a lot like I do when I'm acting and stuff. And the real problem was that we wanted to create something. Their concerns and mine were the same, that when a film or a TV show is successful, it's when an audience can project itself into that project and go along with it. You know what I mean? They can
right.
be in the film and have some kind of cathartic reaction. That were my concerns when I was doing this, that the parameters were do not do anything that so arbitrarily forces somebody that's playing the game or might excite some of their prejudice or emotional prejudice or whatever.
Right.
And some of the times they had to rein me in. They said, you know, I think that's going too far. And I said, you know, all right. And a couple of times they wanted me to go places where I said, no, I don't. If I do that, I think we're crossing that line. So mm-hmm. it was a very, very mutual, respectful relationship that I found. And being virginal to the process, and I think they had never really worked with anyone of, you know, of my ilk, the way I do things. It was a complimentary situation because we sort of felt our way through the first one.
Did you take a look at the game much after it came out, the first one?
I saw it. I was absolutely blown away by the technological part of the game and the visuals. I have not seen the new one.
Right.
I've seen some of the working up of the character and stuff. But that's not my concern.
Yeah.
That's outside my control.
Right.
And my involvement. My involvement is like on an emotional level
right.
of creating this character.
From an actor standpoint, were you happy with how the first game turned out?
I'll tell you what I have been. It's the strange thing. You're not here, but I was talking at the press conference that film fans are very standoffish.
Mm-hmm.
They say, hi, how do you do? I really like your work and stuff like that. TV fans have an ownership. It's almost like you're an appliance or a piece of furniture. they talk to you like they own you. And the fans of this game, and over the last couple of years, hundreds of them, sit down. They'll literally pull up a chair and sit down. Their familiarity with me, and it's not, and the strangest thing is, I'm a very private person. It's not obtrusive. It's not something that's uncomfortable.
Right.
You know what I mean? They'll sit down, and it's almost like talking to another actor that I've worked with.
So it's not like a celebrity thing?
No, it's almost, and invariably we end up talking about their life or their family or their day-to-day life and stuff like that. They have a level of familiarity with me and with that character, Sam. The only thing I can tie it to is, for me, is like talking to an actor I haven't seen in about 10 years that I did a film with. You know, there's a familiarity base there. And for me, it's very entertaining because I get to be kind of voyeuristic. Mm-hmm. I think I'm watching their body posture and their comfortability with me more than they're watching me. You know, it's very entertaining. And also, it's been right across the board. I was talking just recently about one guy. I remember I was on did a film in Sofia, Bulgaria last year, and I ordered something to eat on the plane and up in first class, and this guy in this three-piece civil suit, this French guy, came over and sat down and went, oh, my God, you're Sam Fisher. He recognized my voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right across the board, socioeconomic, racial, age groups. I've had fans of this game that are in their 50s all the way down to people in their early 20s from, you know, tatted up board guys, you know, and to, you know, executives and businessmen.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one guy talking to me about he played the game. He had a new baby, and when the baby woke up in the middle of the night and he couldn't sleep, he'd sit there and play the game, you know, which is kind of refreshing.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm a Luddite and I don't game, so I think
right.
I had one of those prejudicial, though I'd never voiced it, sort of thought that, well, these games are isolationist in the sense that they're probably people that, you know, don't have a lot of social skills and stuff
right.
like that. And I was proven absolutely 180 degrees wrong. You know, the gamers are like everyone else.
Yeah, some of us would probably take offense to that.
No, I don't mean to be offensive, and I
yeah,
really don't.
I'm just kidding.
And if it's, and please don't take it that way.
Oh, no,
but
no.
I think I had a kind of a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And it's not something I'd ever voiced. It
mm-hmm.
was just sort of like, you know, a stereotypical idea. Based upon my nephew, who is always playing games. I
right.
saw all gamers like him. And the truth is, it's your rank and file, everyday human being. And I've really enjoyed the fans. Of the three groups of fans, actually the most approachable and the easiest to be around are the game fans. They really are, like, quite pleasant to be around.
Well, do you think that it's the fact that they're taking control of your character in the game and kind of interacting with your experience that breeds that familiarity?
It's their familiarity with me, I think, based upon the game, that they are shoulder to shoulder with that character, and the familiarity of having a certain amount of control over the actions and choices and the ability to make decisions and stuff like that, that they have a companionship with that person, with that persona. I mean, if you could experience it from my end, you'd understand. It's just, it's not your normal fan person that sits down with me. It's quite strange, and in a very comfortable way.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll take that as a compliment to gamers at large.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So you've got a pretty recognizable...
Are you a gamer?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's what we do here. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's
because, no, I mean, I'm not a gamer, and, you know, it's like anything else, though. It's like, for example, when I do a film in another country, I think there's a certain amount of trepidation going there. Even though it's this, you know, like baseball, for example, as a metaphor, is played different places and the rules, there's a different attitude to everything. And I'm always have a certain amount of trepidation when I go to another country to see how they, you know, they synergize synthesize the process. And as entertainment goes, I've been having a ball with the people who played this game. You know, I get all the entertainment coming back from it.
It's really good to hear.
No, it is. I think. Why, do you have a stereotypical attitude towards yourself and gamers?
Not really. I mean, like you said, you know, everybody that plays games is just a human being, you know, so all different types of people are into it.
Yeah. The thing that, there's a few people that have actually voiced it, I remember one guy talking to me, he said that he was really, the thing I kind of gleaned was is that it was an outlet for a lot of his frustration. You know, for the kind of powerlessness and the impotence of what's going on in the world right now.
Right.
You know, and this is not your, you know, strange person sitting there talking to you. It's just another guy saying, God, you know, I feel good when I'm finished with this game. I feel more comfortable when I started.
Yeah, it's a way to escape, I guess, like all other entertainment.
I don't know if... I've never bought escapism. I think it's a component of the human being or the human animal, whether it's somebody telling a story over a campfire or, you know, a Broadway show or a theater or film or television or even these games. There's an inclusion that happens, and it's a part of, like, a tribal society that speaks to us. And it seems to certainly work for gamers, you know. There's an inclusion that happens after doing this. It's anti-isolationist. It's completely to my original thoughts about it, you know, that it's the reverse of what I expected.
So you've been pigeonholed into this role, but you have played a lot of villains in your career.
Yeah, I've also played a lot of priests and teachers, but nobody ever remembers those.
Yeah, well, you know, we all saw Total Recall and Scanners and stuff like that. But and you've also got, you know, really distinctive voice. So did you take any of that sort of thing into Sam Fisher, or did you try to give him like an anti-hero's edge? You know,
No, I was a service to the writing. I don't think it's a mistake that this film is this project is as successful as this with Tom Clancy's involvement. True to what I was saying is the writing was exceptional compared to other things that had been shown me, and enough that it frightened me. Could I do this? Could I make it real? And it's stayed true to form, you know. Whether it's film, television, or games, I think if they haven't found out now, it's the same as in film and television with games. It starts with the actual script. I think if for anything to have any longevity, it has to have an intelligent and thoughtful and provoking kind of base of writing. You know, if it's monochromatic and it's emotional content and stuff like that, it's just not going to have any legs. You know, God, you know, remember Pong?
Yeah, indeed. So did you have any input? I think you said you sort of served the writing, but did you have any input at all while you were in the studio? Like, did you guys did you get to ad-lib anything?
Well, not ad-lib as much as change things. In the first couple of sessions, I don't think we recorded it very much. We basically worked the character up. And again, it's hats off to Ubisoft that they were probably their first time working with somebody of my ilk.
Uh-huh.
And they... You know, at my suggestion, they got an actor in that could play other characters so I could react to him. I can't remember his name. He was from Montreal. He had been involved in the game. And they had parameters that they wanted to stay within. The whole point is when you create something, whether it's in a film or a television or in this game, was not to create something that forces somebody out of the reality that you're creating. And I think a couple of times I went overboard, and the guys from Ubisoft and the technician said, you know, that's going a little too far. And I go, okay. And a couple of times they said, we want you to do this. And I said, I'm not doing that. I'll show you. And I gave them about four or five choices. And they were just as nervous and accepting as I was. It was a real mutual effort. And I think the end product speaks for itself, you know, that we, because it's, you don't want to create something that's completely benign, but at the same time, you don't want to create something that's so specific in its emotional base that people can't identify with him, you know? It's like you got to create a living suit that somebody can sort of project themselves into and identify with. That's why with the character there was a very specific reason in my base that I don't even know if they're aware of, that I create a character that can't give affection or accept affection. You're not probably aware of it. I was doing a project up here, a miniseries called The Last Chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And on my days off, I'd go up to Ubisoft and work on this game. And that character was the national chairman of an outlaw motorcycle gang. It was a four-hour miniseries that deals with gang laws and gangs, motorcycle gangs here in Canada. And everything I was not getting to play in that character, I was getting to play with Sam, which was kind of interesting. They're both similar in the sense that they were paranoid and kind of burnt from by society and stuff like that. And we're family-based. And those muscles that I don't get to use when I was doing The Last Chapter, I got to use on this game, which was fun.
Right.
It was like a balancing out. You know, it was a bit of a gift.
So how long did it take to do all the voiceover for this? Like,
When we finally got down to recording, it was like 3 days.
So you probably don't find it too strenuous, really?
Without getting into a huge diatribe about acting, it had its own innate problems. But that's what I said. It was like, can I do this and make it real the best I can? And I enjoyed the process. You know?
Did you and the other people working on the game feel more confident going into Pandora Tomorrow? Because, you know, the first game was a new property. You know, it hadn't been out before, so it was kind of unproven as far as how popular it would be. But
it was a little bit different with the second game in the sense that we'd already established Sam, so I had that kind of base to work from.
Right.
And the script wasn't completely finished.
Mm-hmm.
It was still in its kind of infant stage. So, yeah, I had comfort going, having the lay of the land, so to speak, that I'd been in there, and I knew I could work within those same specific parameters that they were creating, and I had a good time the second time. But like everything else, it was not like new love, you know. The
right.
First time I was quite a challenge,
right.
And had, you know, I had all my own personal prejudice to get over. And the second time there was a little more familiarity.
Cool. Well, thanks for speaking with us.
Well, thank you,
cool.
And you take care of yourself.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.